The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
It is after 7 p.m. We go straight into the world of money and power, and we take a look at the company news and the latest happening out in the world of business. And joining me to do so is independent market commentator, analyst, and CA Snesipho Manindwa. Snesipho, good evening to you and welcome.
Evening, Aya. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. Can't complain. Unjani wen?
Yeah, I'm good.
Yeah. Let's start. I want us maybe just to start off with company news, and we'll come back to some of the big stories out at Eskom, maybe at Seriti rather than Eskom, but also that's happening out in the United Kingdom. Let's first start off with Spur Corporation, the guys who give us John Dory's, Panarottis, Rocco Mamas, and the Spur chain of restaurants. What do you make of their numbers? Looking a lot better, even on the franchise revenue front, than what we might have seen this time last year.
And yes, I think I think we all know what Spur's model. So they, two things have happened in the past calendar year. I think the first of all reference point would be the relaxation of the COVID-19 regulation, which really hurt their pockets in terms of revenue. From a revenue perspective, because I think we discussed this at the time of the regulation, and part of the reasons why the restaurant industry was at an uproar for the on the COVID-19 regulations was fundamentally a lot of people don't actually go out to eat. They go out for alcohol, and that's what a lot of restaurants, it turns out, their primary driver was. A second thing that they did was they changed their amendment of their model in terms of the franchise support. As you know, Spur is, although they provide franchise support, and that you buy individual franchises, and they sort of restructured it to be lower in amount. Lower in amount to make it easier for the franchisees to stay in business, because ultimately it is a matchup between entrepreneurs and entrepreneurs. Thirdly, what they also focused on was focusing more on restructuring their menu to look at more profitable meals. So I think I haven't been to Spur because I don't have children, but changing the menu to focus more on better margin products, so you don't have loss leaders. So, for example, what would happen to most restaurants if you take the absence of alcohol? They have quite a few meals that they sell as loss leaders because they fundamentally know they're going to recoup the counter on your alcohol bill. So they've looked at restructured the menu to be more optimal in that perspective, because I don't think it makes sense for anyone to have loss leaders as a product. But it is sometimes things that you do to bring foot traffic onto the stores, but not necessarily the most, when there's, in the absence of foot traffic, that sort of decision tree doesn't seem to hold.
Yeah. What do you make, I guess, of some of the other divisions here? I mean, I'm always quite interested in Rocco Mamas and what it is that they've managed to do there. If you compare, I guess, full year through to June 2022 versus the full year of the same year through to 2021.
Rocco Mamas, so a few things Rocco Mamas did. I don't go to Rocco Mamas again. These are weird. Rocco Mamas introduced the drive-through option, which I think really helps with their foot traffic. And they have also focused on more to try, because their primary market initially was for sales. And again, within the COVID-19 regulation, a lot of people are not sitting down because of the alcohol. So that was really their primary market was focused on, but introducing drive-through and partnering more, being specific and being more deliberate in partnering with delivery, other delivery applications is something that they've done, as well as focusing on the customization. They had something called Design Your Own Burger. Design Your Own Burger. And, you know, I see the thinking. I see the thinking because it is another way of increasing your customer base and looking to attract a different clientele to your business. I think that's quite important. But it seems the change has helped. From a numbers perspective, it seems to have helped quite a bit. But I think time will tell. I think the last time we were focusing on Spirit Group, I think even before COVID-19 was when they had a boycott from their people, regarding to how they responded to certain racist elements. And I think we've long past that, and we're in a sort of a rebound era.
Yeah. And then I guess the other question mark is, of course, some of the support they'd given to some of their franchisees during the COVID-19 moment, as they wound a lot of that support down, that improved their earnings profile somewhat. Just going forward, I guess I'm quite interested in what expectation you might have. I mean, consumers seem squeezed, cost of living, you know, crunch we find ourselves in. Not much by way of discretionary household income for many. How are they responding to that and seemingly starting to focus not only just on their sit-down play or people walking in, but looking for digital channels and, as you said, for Rocamamas, even the drive-through options?
As much as the consumer's under pressure, their target market is not parents with the shrinking wallets. Their target market is the children. It's a slightly different. So yes, the consumer is squeezed, but that consumer is the parent. And parents sacrifice for their children. Remember, their entire value proposition has never been about targeting the parents. It's always been creating an experience for the tiny human who will then manipulate their parents. It's quite simple. Then going into delivery and focusing on digital channels and takeaway is actually going against the traditional market, and it's expanding an additional market because the attraction for the tiny people has always been the play area. It's literally the play area, and that is not, you can't experience that in a drive-through scenario. So it's attracting a different and additional client base. And even when you look at the pricing in, I would say, Rocamamo specifically, they're trying to go after Famous Brands' lunch, competing in the likes of your Sears, also your McDonald's. So it's a different type of, and Nando's as well, it's a different type of market that they're going, so they're expanding their offering, which I think is quite prudent and an adjustment. So, and also remember, again, with the tiny people, it's not necessarily them not going. It's them decreasing their frequency of going. But I live near a neighborhood, and I can tell you every weekend that place is packed.
Yeah. Then, Snezipo, I want us maybe just, I guess, to pause on that particular one and maybe take a look at some of the other company news that came through. Bank Group APSA put out some numbers early on today, gave some guidance to the market. Whenever we look at banks, a few metrics to consider, but let's maybe start off with that top line number. What do you make of how they've performed? But also more importantly, I guess, what they've done on the cost side of things also net interest margins as well.
They came up with the announcement this morning. I was pleasantly surprised, especially when we look at specifically what were the drivers, and it literally was on the back of fundamentals. Even if you were to take out the consideration of the provision profits, I think what was very, very clear to note was the increase specifically in the movement of accounts opening, the increase in lending, primary lending. It was quite a bit of an increase. What I think also helped them quite significantly is that they had only a 7% increase in normalized costs, which meant they had a very, very good control of their cost base. But let me just take you through just some key levels. Was your loans increased by 11%, which is what most banks do. That obviously had a direct impact on your net interest revenue, and especially since we're on the interest rate upward curve. Momentum. Increase in deposits, again, that actually is a very big function of a bank. I think one of a way to assess the health of a bank is specifically your growth in deposits. Of course, you had the adjustments of the provisions. Initially, I think quite a significant number of banks, specifically when we look at the 2020-2021 period, specifically they increased their provisions quite significantly. They have released some now, but which has helped with profitability, of course, because we had Nedbank also deliver results last week. But when you look at pure fundamentals, it's looking quite good, and it's looking quite good. I think, yeah, it's definitely looking quite good, considering that most people's income has decreased on a real basis year on year. When you hear things like deposits that increase, and it being on more of an 8% tells you that they've increased the number of accounts open, number of active positive cash balances as well, which are a good indicator. What I think is quite clear on is that they're doing a bit better.
Yeah. And I guess, you know, the kind of turnaround story, they certainly haven't had a lot of good news in the last while.
I think we remember the uproar over their management, their untransformed management, because that is a fact. It's not to be disputed. It's not their untransformed management. And some of their boardroom tussles with a certain gentleman who tried to become a chair. I think those things don't seem to, that noise from just a board level hasn't filtered through to the business, which I think is a very, very good sign. It's a very, 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 very good sign. But we shall see. We shall see in terms of where do they land on.
Yeah. Now, here's another interesting one. I mean, you and I have certainly had this discussion before in the context of Sasol. But it seems in the United Kingdom, it's becoming somewhat of a political hot potato. And that's a windfall tax. Let's maybe talk about what that is, firstly, before we unpack what this is going to mean for some of the oil and gas majors and also British consumers and households.
Okay, so fundamentally, quite simple. The price of gas for UK consumers has tripled. The price of petroleum has doubled. More than doubled as a base. As a result, you had, I think, today Aramco published their results, and it is mouth-watering and disgusting at the same time. from a financial perspective. And as a result of the exit of Boris, we're now in election season, and of course, you've got politicians who are all trying to vie for everyone's attention. And one of the proposals that have been put on place has been the windfall tax on the additional profits most petroleum companies have made, energy-related companies have made as a result of this price situation we have in, because it has been quite significant on the quite adverse on the consumer. However, and this is what I say, however, a lot of this is posturing. It's the same way I view it as a wealth tax. From a cost-based perspective, the cost of digging oil, gas, etc., has not increased by double, has not increased by triple, but the profit has. There's a level of unfairness about that scenario that has been allowed to be continued that is allowed to continue and that has resulted in a situation where consumers are significantly stretched. Now, whether or not there's political will to execute on this is neither here nor there, because as we all know, as we see the round pull of a wealth tax in our own jurisdiction, it hasn't received the level of real policy making. It's all posturing at this current time, and it hasn't really moved. So again, lots of posturing, very little, if any, action that's going to take place, in my opinion. I could be proved wrong. I'm open to being proved wrong. But when it comes to the politicians, especially when we think of anything that affects the rich, has never actually materialized. And I can use a very real case study on it. So a few weeks ago, the Democrats passed in the U.S. legislature a new spending bill. The thing that they took out was a wealth tax. They managed to pass everything. They have control of the House. They have control of the Senate. They proposed many things, including student loan relief. However, the wealth tax, which is what would bring in the most amount of revenue and would have a positive impact on your fiscus, has not been enacted.
Just a quick one on that one. Do you not think that this one, I guess, I mean, in that context in the U.S., Democrats and Republicans, surely on either side, would have had some agreement about not doing a wealth tax for whatever reasons. But in this time around, I guess there are parts of the Conservative Party in the United Kingdom and Labour who in principle are agreed that you probably do want to raise some money through a windfall tax to give some cushion to households in what has become the UK's largest cost of living crisis, certainly since the Second World War.
They agree in principle, but who are their benefactors? Who are the campaign? No one disagrees. No one disagrees with the principle. This is a simplification of, do they have the political will to execute on this? If they do it, I'm happy to be proven wrong. I want them to do it because I believe in principle. I believe in the principality of it. However, I'm a bit, I don't know. Me, I don't believe politicians. I just don't think that they have in their interest, they have a constituency in their interest, because fundamentally, like, I don't see it. And I'll even take it a step further. So if you look at the background of the House of Commons and where they went to school, more than two-thirds of them went to private schooling, meaning from upper class. I don't see them acting against it. Like I said, this is one of the very few instances in my life where I would love to be incorrect.
Stasibo, let's leave it there on that one. And just as we wrap up, I'd love to hear your thoughts. Seriti, making a further play in the renewable energy space. We do know, of course, they've been involved in one of the bid rounds already and known to many as a thermal coal exporter and largely in that neck of the woods. What do you make of this?
It is expected. So they bought an asset called WindLab. It's an Aussie entity together with some banks as co-shareholders for the transaction. If you look at what Sumiti has done with this transaction as an entrance, it's slightly different to Exxaro. So Exxaro has within their stable an entity called Synergy, which is a renewable, which is actually an IPP. I think when we think of Exxaro, the likes of Exxaro, I would even add Thungela and Sumiti in this, is that we have to understand their actual business is not the product of coal, it is energy. So it should be wide within any energy available source. And then making a play into renewables makes a lot of sense because it does two things. Number one, it brings down their cost of energy, and it makes it more predictive, because if we look at the increases that Eskom has passed over, I think, the last decade plus, they have been in excess of inflation. in some cases, multiples of the inflation. So having a predictive energy asset, it allows you to do that. Secondly, it also allows them to start entering, they've been getting a lot of flack specifically regarding ESG and the fact that coal primarily is still, even with the amendments the EU has made in terms of classification, is still viewed as a fossil fuel, dirty fossil fuel. Therefore, new money is not entering new money. Existing money, yes, from a brownfield, but no new money from a greenfield perspective is looking to invest in an asset. One, something I disagree vehemently against, but however, I don't control people's paychecks. But it does make sense from an ESG perspective to start looking at transition, as looking at from a transition from that perspective, and buying wind land, which already has existing operations, instead of building your own in-house, which is one of the different things that the other entities have done. Anglo has gone from an outsourced model, in terms of actually appointing IPPs. Dassault in-house, Exxaro in-house to an extent. But it does speak to how we shouldn't view them as literally just coal entities. They're in the business of energy, whichever resource they're in the business of the resource of energy. So it's within their mandate, also within their from a business perspective.
Yeah.
I think it's a good play for them, but I'm curious to find out. In terms of. They've mentioned a few megawatt projects. I'm curious to find out which specific projects are they looking to and whether or not there will be a play in this upcoming bid round, which is closing in a few weeks. So it's setting themselves up properly with it. And partnering the banks makes your life easier because ultimately it aligns interests.
Sure. So, Lizabeth, we're going to have to leave it there for tonight. Always a pleasure catching up with you. And thank you very much for your time.
Pleasure.
That there was Nesipho Maninjwa, independent commentator, analyst, and CA, joining us for our wrap of the top business stories. Just out of interest, we're talking about the Spur Corporation early on. Have you ever wondered why all of the Rocamamas outlets are always located close to McDonald's? Just out of interest, have you ever wondered? All of them, everywhere you go, it's always alongside or just front opposite or side opposite from a McDonald's. I wonder why.
Good evening, Aya. Good evening. Welcome back, brother. Nice Thank to you. Hear your voice again. We missed you, brother. On the issue of Kenya, there is more than that. Why the Independent Electoral Commission members were fighting? I think something big has happened there, but we hear because it's too early to predict what actually happened. But it's something that I don't know what to explain. But all in all, that's the African politics. Always such things happen if there's no oppositions fighting. And so now this is a different story. We hear about the Electoral Commission. They are fighting. The members are fighting. I think something has happened there. And also our condolences to the family for the loss of one of the great guy, the TKZ member who has just died. We are with the family. My condolences to the whole family. This is Mike from Cape Town. Thanks, brother. Welcome back again.
Danko Mike. Danko Mike. Thank you very much there. And yeah, indeed, our condolences to the Shabalala family on their loss. And yeah, I guess to your point on what's happening out in Kenya, it's a very bizarre situation where you find the IEC of that nation divided and split on an outcome of this kind. And I guess only time will tell, as I said to Andile a little bit earlier on.
Welcome back, Mbatane. It's Sunday Saturday in Cape Town. I saw Sihle Sikalala crying on national television this morning. So, yeah. But then I am coming with what Usine Sibo is saying with regards to the issue of politicians. I see that SARS is making money like nobody else's business. They are increasing their revenue, yet the economy is not growing. And that has to tell us a story, that the country is being milked, like a cow. And I am afraid that at some point it's going to bleed and it's going to die. People are going to get fed up with politicians who take the money and go and do as they please. And we have a whole lot of wasteful expenditure without anything to result in anything. So I believe that we do need, we do not need a policy change. We just need a personnel change. And that is it. I think if ever we can just focus on that, I think this country will go forward. Thank you very much.
Sure, Tasendi, thank you very much for that comment. Tasendi, they're out in Cape Town and saying, look, he certainly sees SARS collecting a lot more. And yet the economy is not growing. Well, I think there's a few things there. I think the one is much more favorable commodity price conditions than what we've certainly seen in the last while. So a lot of those collections, I mean, if you go and check out the mineral royalties numbers, you'll see how much of a surge there has been in that part. But also we know that the nature of that industry itself, large parts of it, are dominated by capital-intensive production, so a lot of people aren't getting jobs and so on. And so the benefits are not evenly distributed across the society. It might also be that SARS is doing a much better job in collecting, I don't know. But it's certainly something that we might want to come back to. But I think the point of the windfall tax itself is that where there is a disjuncture or discord or disconnect between the cost of producing a certain commodity and the massive runaway prices, be it because of Ukraine, Russia, or whatever reason, I think a government should be well within its rights to do that. So, yeah, I mean, it's not a new debate in South Africa, I must say. I mean, in August 2007, 15 years ago, the National Treasury, after having done a review, I think, for a few years, then decided that, no, they're not going to explore the proposal of a windfall tax against Sasol. Ask anybody who makes glass or makes any other industrial product that requires gas whether or not they might feel now that that should have been in place because they're reeling. Reeling. So yeah, let me know what your thoughts are. I'd love to hear those. Do share with us your voice notes. We're out there on WhatsApp. You can reach us on our WhatsApp line and send through those voice notes 060-552-7303. Let's take a brief break now. When we come back, talking about SARS, we talk about Bain.